get the feeling that everything in America is completely f***ed up?
They're saying I should think stuff. Something is wrong with me.
To be so cynical.
Practice.
Bienvenidos al Cinemoso Positivo. What am I now? Positwan Cynicism. Welcome to Positive Cynicism. Bienvenue a Cynicisme Positif. Welcome in Positive Cynicimas. Alright, now that I have probably offended everybody listening to the show in some fashion by proving that I don't speak foreign languages. Welcome to Positive Cynicism. I don't even know if I should introduce myself now. I feel like I have gone off the deep end. I am your host, Chad Smart. You can find me on Twitter and tell me how horrible my foreign languages are at Chad Smart. But before you do that, go over to the JitteryMonkey.com site. Check out the other shows here on Jittery Monkey. Kevin Hunsberger's My 1-2-3 Cents, Greg Mahochko's Five Heart, and Nerds United. And then hit that shop button or store button. I think it's shop. Hit shop, buy a t-shirt, and maybe I will have one coming out that has all the different languages saying, welcome to Positive Cynicism. Maybe. What do you think? Good idea? Bad idea? Okay. We'll play it by ear. That's all I've got to say to get the plugs out of the way for the start of the show. You know the deal if you've been listening. Now we'll go into commercial break. Come back this episode, we're talking politics and why we don't want to talk politics. So stick around for that. It's actually a very entertaining discussion. I believe. You can tell me later that it sucks, but I think it was a good discussion. And then there's a little surprise at the end of the show regarding future episodes. So stick around for that. Again, I apologize if my foreign language lessons were insulting to anyone. Just trying to mix it up here.
Hi, this is Greg Mahochko, the host of Nerds United on the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. And over the years that I've been running the Nerds United show, I've been fortunate enough to speak with many of my talented friends, both artists and writers, creators of comic books, but I've also spoken with some more recognizable names in comics and entertainment. Legendary artist Greg Land, hey, we Greg's gotta stick together. Writer Colin Bunn, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, and comic book creator DMC Daryl McDaniels, The Flash of yesteryear, and in more recent memory, Flash's dad, John Wesley Shipp, and a lot more. And I encourage you to subscribe to the Nerds United podcast on iTunes or Stitcher, or you can check it out anytime you want on JitteryMonkey.com. And as founder of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network, I really do appreciate your support. When you share a podcast, you help get our little corner of the podcasting world out to even more people. So anytime you do that, you really don't know how much we appreciate it. So share away.
All right. I am joined, as is often the case here towards the end of the month, by Brandon Cooley, who I deem our political expert here at Positive Cynicism. And I do that mainly because he works on political ads and you studied political science in college, correct?
Yep.
So
glad to be back.
that's pretty much all it takes to be an expert on my show is, if you just said you know how to spell politics, I'd like good enough. But we had talked. I sent you some ideas for this month's episode, and I kind of came to an epiphany while I was prepping all the topics and everything, and I remembered why I stopped talking politics on the show to begin with a couple of years ago, and that is I think the last week of May here has kind of broken me in my, like, the whole focus of the show has been, or has my focus I wanted to be, has been political hypocrisy and talking about how both sides are guilty of the same issues, but the way we perceive them is different depending on our biased behavior or belief. And so, to start off, Elizabeth Warren said that she would not do a town hall meeting on Fox News and called them a for-profit, actually, let me pull up the exact wording so I can make sure I quote her, a hate-for-profit racket that gives a megaphone to racists. Now, I am old enough to remember when calling the media fake news was enough to claim, you know, that you're violating the First Amendment and all this. So how is it now that Trump, you know, has been vilified for his criticism of the media, but yet Elizabeth Warren, it's okay for her to demean an entire organization?
Yeah, I mean, my answer is pretty simple. I think she should go on Fox News, and what she said is wrong. I would praise Buttigieg and Klobuchar and Sanders for going on Fox News. And I mean, I even told a friend recently that I agree with Elizabeth Warren on some policy issues, but I don't agree with the way she's running her campaign, partly because she calls for impeachment and this whole Fox News thing. Because it's a vast generalization to make about a whole news channel. There's op-ed shows on Fox News like CNN and MSNBC. And those people can be pretty despicable, sure, but I mean, it's a news channel, and during the day at noon, you know, 2-3 o'clock, it's just news. I mean, it may be a little bit right. Like, I know Fox and Friends is in the morning, that's pretty far right. But, you know, the whole goal is to get people to vote for you. And, you know, if you get 10% Fox News viewers, those are 10% more. It's a lot of viewers, a lot of voters. They're going to support you. So, and I mean, you know, Buttigieg and Sanders and Klobuchar have gotten some, you know, a lot of good reviews for, not good reviews, but, they've gotten a lot of support for going to Fox News by the moderates who watch, you know, who watch it, or just independents, the older people in America who watch Fox News. So, yeah, there's really no reason not to. The same reason why Republicans should go on CNN town halls. You know.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you 100% there. And excuse me, it's just this whole, I think, idea of Fox News being evil or being... they're criticized for being right leaning, and I know their motto is fair and balanced, and it's not balanced. It definitely tilts to the right. But although you did have Trump come out and say, you know, with having Buttigieg and Sanders on, that Fox is going towards the losing side, and I know that with Rupert Murdoch stepping down and one of his sons taking over Fox News, I think they want to move it more either central or a little bit to the left. But as I've said on the show before, it's this idea that Fox is terrible because of where it stands without taking into account the other media sources that are completely in, you know, 180 degrees in the opposite, and they're treated as, you know, the bastions of good faith. I mean, you look at CNN, who had Michael Avenatti on, what, 70 times in a 3-month span during the whole Stormy Daniels thing, and, you know, kind of encouraged him to run for president, and now he's possibly running to be Michael Cohen's cellmate. So,
the Democratic Party dodged that bullet because it was looking like he might actually be a good candidate in this age of Trump, but then it turned out something to do with Nike, of him extorting money. I don't know. It's nothing to do with the Stormy Daniels thing, which was just political theater, but it was kind of an entertaining couple months of watching CNN. But, I mean, on CNN, there's like Don Lemon and Chris Cuomo and Rachel Maddow's in MSNBC. I mean, they're kind of annoying. They're not really like – they don't say as many crazy things as Sean Hannity, I would argue.
I would
just in terms of like the amount of stuff. Like, I mean, it depends on how you define crazy. Like, it's complaining, really, on both sides. That's really what it comes down to, and who it appeals to. I mean, my favorite anchor on CNN is Jake Tapper, because he tries to at least ask, you know, the tough questions to both sides, you know. I watch CNN just – I'm not a fan of MSNBC because it just is for liberals. CNN kind of is too, but at least it's kind of entertaining to watch cable news, and you have to pick one of them. I don't know. I thought about switching back and forth between all three just out of curiosity, but maybe closer to election time. But
Well, isn't Don Lemon or Lemon the one who claimed that the missing airplane got swallowed up by a black hole a couple years ago?
I wasn't watching CNN back then. It'd be interesting if he said that. I can't remember. It was the Malaysian. Because the CNN talked about that for months on end. I remember that was a huge deal. That was breaking news. I joke around that CNN, everything's breaking news. Yeah. They use that banner for everything. But
this is true. I think they had a breaking news for a countdown to something at one point.
Yep.
It's like, if you're counting down to it, it's not breaking. And, I would say that, much like they covered this missing airplane for 2 months, I think they did end up finding it. I'm going to keep my sarcastic comment to myself. But, and I know I started off this show saying we weren't going to talk politics, but we are going to talk politics because that's what we're here for. But it's just at this point where, I was thinking, you and I have had good conversation back and forth, people that I've talked to in real life, you can actually have the conversation. But I guess at the end of the day, nothing we say here is going to change anyone's point of view. I mean, I would like it to, but probably not, because everyone is so fractured right now that I just look at everything that's going on, and the immediate reaction on social media in the news is so, there's no middle ground.
Yep. I think something can sum up. I've been telling friends and family this. Something can sum up like what's been happening the last 8 or 10 years. And that's that back in the day with politics, politicians would use emotional appeals to explain policy. Now it's the reverse. They're using policy to explain their emotional appeal to voters. And that's what they're trying to exploit in people, that kind of emotion. So, and that's a problem because, I mean, even, of course, the abortion bills are going, of course, I'm against it. It's in my home state, Georgia, and in Alabama and other states. But even on the left, I mean, right after we finished our last episode, Bernie Sanders came out saying that felons should be able to vote. I'm just against that totally and completely. Just philosophically, I mean, I think the ex-felon should be able to vote, which has happened before, but felons in prison, for one, probably don't want to vote, but they shouldn't be allowed to vote when you're in prison. You can't own property. I mean, that's not, I know what they're trying to get at with, prison reform, but that's not how you get to that. That's not how you actually solve that problem. So it's just, they're going to these extremes just to get people all riled up and to support them, basically. Yeah, that's...
and I think that's the key. You touched on it at the end of the last episode where we originally were going to discuss what would it take for you to vote for someone on the other side of the aisle than what you identify as. And you mentioned you wanted more moderate. It would be someone, more moderate. And I'm in that same boat where even though I want to consider myself a moderate, I know that I lean more conservative because to me it's the right or the left is going too far to the extreme to where I can't get behind a lot of what they want to do, even though I agree on principle. And for case in point, the abortion bills that are going around, I am not a supporter of abortion. There's nothing you can say to me that will convince me that's not murder. But I also know you can't, if you look at it from a morality state, you can't legalize morality. You can't legislate morality. And banning abortion will not stop abortions from happening. It's going to make it more the back alley. So I think what was done in Virginia and New York earlier this year where they went, trying for the third trimester or the live abortion debate is now the right is going too far to where it's like banning abortion before you may even know that you're pregnant. And I think there has to be a common sense approach to these laws, and instead of going so far to the extreme, I don't know. It's crazy that everything is. I think politicians, their job is to divide us. The media is there to divide us because if they can keep us divided, they stay in power. Whereas if we can actually work together, we might actually, find out we're not that opposite.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at it a different number of ways. Historically, I mean, you know, I feel nostalgic for the days when politics was supposed to be boring. You know, like it was a lot of numbers and, you know, like just legislation being passed by both sides and compromising. Because, I mean, it used to be like if you just agree, if the two parties disagreed on, you know, taxes, you just compromise in the middle somewhere, you know. That's what Reagan and Tip O'Neill used to do back in the 80s. And Bill Clinton was a moderate, you know, he was a Democrat, but, you know, won a lot of Republican voters because he compromised a lot of things. He did a lot of things that were liberal, too, but kind of was our last moderate president, I think, because George Bush took us farther to right. And Obama was liberal, but tried to pretend to be a moderate. It didn't really work out most of the time after his first 2 years. But, yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't have started when it went in this direction. I mean, you could argue maybe it was 2000, the Bush v. Gore election. Which I remember actually as a kid. It was the first time I ever like watched politics on TV. May have been that. I don't know. I mean, because it was more extreme back in like the Vietnam years where you used to like when they first started televising Vietnam, I mean, people were protesting on the streets. The 68 convention and the Democratic Party just went, you know, nuts because Humphrey was elected. I mean, it's been worse before, obviously, but within this age of media, it's like it's just perpetual. It's constantly on our minds. It's in the news on our phones, you know. So I think it's social media and cable news combined, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you go back even further back to, I believe it was either Jefferson or his opponent that would claim, you know, your daughters would be raped if you voted for the other person. So, yeah, it's been there. And I agree. My political leanings have moved because of this. It's I think 2000 was the turning point for where we are now because of Florida not being able to handle an election. And, you know, for every result or paper or whatever you can find to say Bush should have been elected, you can find one that says Gore should have been elected. There's no... Yep. You know, it kind of goes back and forth depending on your point of view. But instead of just accepting that Bush was named president and saying, okay, what can we do in 4 years? I think that rightist, keep saying right, I'm so Freudian slipping tonight, is that leftist mentality of being angry and being I call it a petulant child. To where that's when I didn't vote in 2000 because I didn't care for either candidate. 2004, I was working in media. I started seeing how the media shaped stories and covered things. Mm-hmm. And that's what kind of pushed me, also just because I think John Kerry, one, barely has a pulse, so I don't even think he can be president. But there's no way I didn't want Kerry in at that time. And then... you know, when Obama got in and you saw how the media treated John McCain during that election, then you saw how they treated Mitt Romney during the 2008. And the same thing now with Trump in there. It's just been 2 years of whining and complaining. And instead of backing up and saying, okay, how can we beat him? Which should have been an easy thing. Like, one, it should have been an easy beat victory in 2008. It should have been an easier beat victory in 2012 because you knew what to expect now. But I am still going on record that if nothing major changes in the next year, if people actually vote on policy and that's what I'm looking for. Just putting aside their personal hatred of Trump, but Trump should win easily because there's no current Democrat running that I think can stand up to him or has enough policy that is better for America.
I think Joe Biden beat Pete Buttigieg have the best chance of beating Trump in 2020. And it's partly to do that Trump is only appealing to his side, the far right, really. I mean, his approval rating's been kind of steady around 42-43%. And so he may win, but it's going to be by a sliver. I mean, it's going to be by the same states as last time, really, because it's really based on five states at this point, you know, winning those three Rust Belt states. And so he has to pull off a straight flush again, basically. I mean, those are typically Democratic states. And like Michigan, there were some Democratic wins in the midterms, but Yeah, I mean, if we pick a, if Democrats pick a candidate like Kamala Harris, she'll lose. Elizabeth Warren will lose. Beto O'Rourke will probably lose. He has actually looked stronger than before. Now he's running for president. It's a pretty bad campaign, but because a lot of it's just based on how you look on TV, how you speak to people, how well the campaigns run, especially. I mean, I'm reading a book called Game Change now. It's about the 2008 election between. Well, right now it's between Obama and Clinton in the beginning, their primaries. And if I had read that before 2016, I never would have thought that Clinton would ever become president because her campaign was so toxic. Not just the way she spoke to voters, but the way she ran her campaign and the people around her were so bad at their job that she never would have won a presidential election. I think. And that's why Obama won in 2008.
Yeah.
In the primary. So that's a huge factor is who you have around you. And, I mean, she didn't even visit the Rust Belt states, really. I mean, she barely did, so that's not going to help.
Yeah, well, I mean, you look at 2016, her campaign, or the whole Democratic caucus, there was no one there to challenge her. Whereas, mm-hmm. had Biden ran, or Warren, or any, even at the time, Cory Booker, probably could have come mm-hmm. out there and won, because she was set up to win. I mean, that's mm-hmm. we can look back now and say that's pretty obvious.
Yeah, it's been that way. I mean, the Clintons have been influencing really since he's been president back in the 90s. But after he was president, they were influencing elections every two year cycle. And so Democrats felt like they had to support her. Otherwise, she wouldn't support them in their race. You know, mm-hmm. So it was just this huge. And, you know, I agree on Clinton on a lot of different policy issues, but if you can't win an election like that, then I don't want you running. I mean, that's as simple as that. I mean, and Bernie Sanders, I think, was a bad option or a bad pick to go up against her because he was so far left. I agree with him philosophically on some stuff, but he started never really had any real policy. It's like free college. Like, okay, well, I don't believe in that. I think we should have some scholarships, you know, like my state in Georgia, we have a Hope scholarship. People who get a 3.0 or 3.5 and above, that makes sense. But he gave out all these policies that I was telling my friend recently. It's like wish fulfillment. We're trying to create a utopia, you know. Like you have to actually come up with policy and the details. And, doesn't fit on a bumper sticker, but that's what people, you know, want. But
yeah, and I mean, that you look at, you know, Bernie now and Kamala Harris and all of them that are going off the, you know, free college, Medicaid for all. I was trying to put together an idea. This is going to show my ignorance in politics right now, but it's I've always said that if the Democrats had written the Declaration of Independence starts off with life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness, correct?
Yep.
If Democrats rewrote that today, it would be abortion, government regulation, and entitlement.
That's a bit much. I mean, what would the Republicans be? Just out of curiosity, no government at all, or I mean, if you want to go the extreme.
No, I mean, I think liberty would still be because I mean, there are still a lot of government regulation that the Republicans. I mean, just today as we're recording this, I saw that Mitch McConnell is trying to raise the smoking age to 21 nationally. And it's like, mm-hmm. one, do you have nothing better to focus on? And two, is that going to help anything? No. And I think if you're a legal adult at 18, I think the drinking age should be lowered back down to 18 because if you can, if you're considered an adult and you can go off to war, then you should be able to smoke and drink. And
yeah, well, just to get that point, I mean, if the theme is hypocrisy here with politics, I mean, Republicans hate big government until it's the military. They love big government and military. The irony behind that is that they've been for low taxes for the last 30, 40 years. Well, if you're waging war, you need to pay with taxes. So you can't really be for both. I mean, we fought World War I, World War II back in the day with some pretty high taxes. Then we lowered them after it was over. You know, so I mean, you can play that game on both sides of hypocrisy once the other side gets in.
Exactly.
But, you know, am I for low taxes? Well, for the middle class, sure. But for the wealthy, I see no reason not to raise them a bit, you know, here and there, depending on what it is, if it's the, you know, capital gains tax versus the, you know, state, I don't know. But what were you saying before the... rewriting the Declaration of Independence. I mean, to that point, I mean, yeah, Democrats want to, like, take away the Electoral College, and it's like, no, don't take away the whole... you can, you know, do what Maine does in Nebraska, and like the states can pass those laws, but it's like, don't go to that far, far left extreme. Yeah. Like, yeah. It,
yet I think California was toying with the idea of if you don't release your tax results, you can't be on the ballot. That's another way to get and it's like, okay, first off, you're California. That's not going to hurt the Republicans, or they hurt the Democrats. Like, it's you know, it's going to go Democrat. California, barring any major shift, is going to be a blue state no matter what. But
sure.
Then if you start messing with those qualifications, what's to say, you know, other states don't rig the system for the opposite party? So, and that's the thing here is, yes, there is hypocrisy, and it comes from both sides. Like, I don't want to make it seem like, you know, the Republicans are all great. No, they're just as big of hypocrites. Like, I've said it probably on here, but I know in conversations before, like, the only difference I see between Republicans and Democrats is who they pander to during the election cycle.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, even something that people don't, that liberals don't bring up about being hypocritical, well, of course, like, I'm bringing up, but something I never hear about in the news or anybody say is that, you know, supposedly Democrats like Bernie Sanders hate the rich. They, you know, want billionaires to pay their fair share. Sure. They never actually point to people in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Make a lot of money doing really nothing. I mean, there are some good actors, but they don't. They make a lot of money just being in movies, you know. They, you know, that's kind of hypocritical too. And I was just thinking recently, okay, with the tax returns, for example, I always think it's funny that he doesn't want to show them because he loves bragging about how rich he is. So why not show tax returns? And there's a lot of smoking. There's a lot of smoke there, like him supposedly losing $1 billion over 10 years, which we just figured out. But
well, he admitted that 13 years ago. Like, that wasn't. Yeah. A scoop.
Yeah. Yeah. We kind of have we have the numbers now, but yeah, it's just, well, I'm not surprised that it happened. People aren't, no one's surprised. And so I wonder, why don't people care on the right? And I saw an article, well, it was in the news a couple days ago, where a billionaire, I think Robert F. Smith, gave Morehouse College graduates, he paid off their loans. He's a billionaire. He paid off all their college debt. And it's great. You know, people celebrated that. But, I mean, they covered that in the news a lot that day. And so I realized, you know, I mean, America is just obsessed with wealth. They just they feel like they're going to be a millionaire someday, or they just feel like billionaires just have a moral immunity, I guess you could say. I don't know. So I mean, both on the left and right, the people on the right look at Trump as if, you know, he's tricked the government into not paying taxes. You know, he's you know, beat the system, so to speak. And so I guess that's how they view it. I mean, they don't care that he doesn't pay taxes. Apparently, that's why they don't care. I don't know. It's just, I'm trying to get in their mindset in order to figure out why they would not care that all that stuff, you know, all this financial records. And
well, I mean, you're talking about the right, correct?
Yeah.
I mean, I can say it from my perspective is, as long as he is doing what is legal, then I can't blame him for not paying taxes if he knows how to, or his tax accountants know how to game the system. And that's where you want to, you know, left talks about raising taxes. It's like, no, close all the tax loopholes, fix the problems that I'm sure many on the left are also utilizing, especially those in Congress who are not middle class. They're probably using the same loopholes that Trump has used. So, I mean, I think basically all boils down to every issue that you hear about coming from a politician is mainly it's just sounds good. Whatever sounds good, whatever will appeal to the, like, there's no this is where I think Trump appeals to, or why the base stands behind Trump, is everything that he said he was going to do, he is either done or is actively trying to do it still, no matter how idiotic it may be. Case in point, building the entire wall. But he said, I'm going to build this wall. He's going to work on it. Whereas most politicians say, I'm going to do X, and then they get into office and forget they ever said anything about it.
Yeah. Well, what he's done so far, I mean, like, the big thing has been the tax bill, which is mostly unpopular in the polls. I mean, about 55% unpopular, give or take some, you know, percentage points. Besides that, he's done stuff like get us out of the climate Paris, you know, the Paris Accords and, you know, the climate change, which I just crazy, but people probably don't care. But
you look at that, the Paris thing, and I mean, I'd have to look this up. I'm going off of memory here. I believe the U.S. still hit all the marks that it would have, whereas the other countries that are in that accord didn't really change anything.
You mean the countries like China, which are not, like, are in the Paris Climate Agreement, but not meeting its standards, you mean?
Yes, yeah.
Sure, yeah, that does happen sometimes, yeah. Like China, yeah.
Yeah.
China and India and the highly populated countries, yeah. Well, countries in Europe are, though. I mean, we should be striving for the Europe example, but that's getting deep in policy. But just in generally speaking, though, I mean, he's fulfilled some promises like that, some small things here and there. But the thing is, though, even with the tax bill, is that wages haven't really gone up by that much. They've gone up naturally for, you know, getting us out of a recession. But, I mean, I think in 2020, next year, this time around, I think people, it'll be back to square one in terms of 2016 because people are still hurting. I mean, their main focus has always been healthcare, and he hasn't repealed in place Obamacare yet. I don't know what he can replace it with, honestly. I mean, I've always said that nothing's going to work because people are so unhealthy in this country. They just, there's more money being taken out of insurance than being put in. So I'm kind of pessimistic about it. But that has been something, you know, that people, that and immigration reform, he hasn't really tackled. But
yeah, I mean, I think as far as healthcare, government should just get out of the business altogether. I don't know why, other than it's a good campaign issue. There's no reason for Washington to be in control of healthcare. Immigration reform, this is one where I think it's going to come back to the hypocrisy topic, where no one wants to actually do anything because of the services that they utilize from the illegal immigration. So, and I'm sure Trump himself at his estates and construction sites and everything has used illegal work. But, I mean, something has to be done. I don't know if it will, because, again, if you solve a problem, you have nothing to campaign on. So...
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's an interesting way to look at it, yeah. Well, I mean, if you solve a problem, then you campaign on solving it. But if only one half believes you solved it and the other half doesn't, then it's just kind of you're just catering to your side. So, exactly. And which is like when I get back to when with that is the fact that it really is based on performance. It's performance art, really. It's how they speak on TV, how they do their town halls and debates, and how assertive they are, you know, how authentic they are, and even stuff like sense of humor. I mean, stuff, small stuff like that. It's that classic saying, you know, voters want to have a beer with their president. Doesn't make any sense, but, you know, that's how people think. I mean, I told a friend, we used to call it, you know, media and politics, the classes I took, low information voters. I mean, people just do not get, like, read the news about politics that often. I mean, maybe they do now more often than it used to be, but, you know, I know science is important, but you can't get me to read about science. I'm just not interested in reading about it. Mm-hmm. People are like that with politics and anything, especially, like, foreign affairs and all that stuff. You know, the small information they get will influence how they think. And if it's cable news or social media, their social media feed, it's going to be extreme. It's going to be more far right or far left. So that's why people are getting more and more divided. But
yeah, I mean, that's a good point, because I don't think enough people are... I mean, even if you read the news, you know, in the newspaper or magazine or watch on TV, you're not getting a full story. You're getting whatever fits into, you know, the front page of the paper or the minute-long story block in the news. And then if you're not going out, you know, we say here on Positive Cynicism, to question everything. If you're not questioning what is going on or trying to seek out more information, then, yeah, you're going to just get the bare bones of the story. And if you're listening to a slanted perspective, you're only going to get that perspective. So that again, you're right, that is dividing us, because when all you can do is repeat what you've heard without understanding the context or anything, you're just going for an extreme belief, I guess, way to say it. So I don't know how we get people to pay attention.
Better civics lessons in high school, maybe. I don't know. I mean, we were taught civics by our gym coach. I mean, like a lot of people are, but nice guy, but didn't know much about politics. But yeah, I mean, you know, I know what you mean that there's hypocrisy on the left and right, well, on the left too. But I mean, I just feel like something I've noticed too in this election cycle, the Democrats, is that Obama called it a circular firing squad. You know, like they will tear each other apart for the smallest thing, and they're always apologizing for stuff. You know, Republicans fall in line, and we're seeing that right now with Trump. I mean, you know, he can say just about anything. They will support him. There's only one. I mean, Amash just came out, a GOP. I never heard of him before, but a GOP congressman came out saying that he may have done stuff that's impeachable. I would even support impeachment. But, I mean, he's the first one. I mean, Jeff Flake kind of did, but they will always fall in line. So, I mean, on the flip side, I think Democrats should fall in line more to actually get a Democrat elected. But, yeah, it's frustrating that – yeah, there's different ways to look, I guess.
Yeah, well, I'm going back to, you know, if the Democrats fall in line. Well, when you have 21, 22 people running, you have to do something to separate yourself. You have to stand out.
Yep.
And so that's where you'll get the tearing down or attacking of the other ones because they're trying to get that top spot. And especially, saw an article last week where it said over the last month, the media has only focused on, I think it was five Democrats. It was like Biden before he got in, Bernie Sanders, or Bernie Sanders is the one, Warren, Kamala,
and Buttigieg.
Yeah, yeah, because
yeah,
Beto's,
it was basically those five. Yeah,
yeah, because yeah. Buttigieg has taken Beto's spot.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah. He's number six now. Yeah.
So
there's a ranking, really. Yeah.
But yeah, when you're not being, and that, I mean, I dislike that when in 2016, when it was the Republicans who had the wide, you know, the numerous people running, it's who's to say that these four that they're focusing on are the best candidates? Like the public needs to know more. And unfortunately, politics is a money business as well. It takes money to, yep. you know, get your word out there. But, yeah, I would really like to see when they do the debates to mix it up between the front runners and the lesser knowns instead of putting all the front runners on one show. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, just this last week, actually, de Blasio announced, which I'm not really much of a fan of at all. I don't really care about de Blasio.
Yeah, apparently, like 98% of New York isn't a fan either.
Yeah, it's ridiculous that he's running. But I'm a huge fan of Steve Bullock, though, and Governor of Montana, who's a moderate Democrat. Who does a lot of progressive stuff. He's for campaign finance reform, which I am for, but a lot of, you know, good stuff in Montana, which would be impossible to get elected as a Democrat. So it's like he's doing something magic up there. But he's running, and so he never didn't get much news attention. He got some. He actually got $1 million in his first 24 hours of fundraising, which is only like, Kamala Harris got maybe 1.6 million. I can't remember the exact number, but so... The fundraising is about the same, but they're not covering him because he's not in the top five. It's a horse race. Now, you could argue why would they focus on Steve Bullock and not the 20 others who are behind 25. That's true, but yeah, who do you focus on when there's 23 candidates? That's, you know, and I always wondered, if they're doing all these town halls on CNN, why don't they do debates between three people? Just get these, you know, like, have these people actually talking, you know, three at a time, mixed up with the people who are high in the polls, low in the polls. People you've heard of, never heard of. That would actually get a lot of viewers. I don't know why. It's probably the campaign's not agreeing to it. They don't want to put themselves out there so soon. But.
Right. Yeah, and I think the first debate is in June, I believe.
Yeah, it's next month. Yeah.
Next month, yeah. Yeah, I actually saw a story today about Steve Bullock. I guess his website says, who the heck is Steve Bullock on his like information page? And they're like, well, you're very... astute in your observation of your own candidacy. We can sit here and talk until we're blue in the face, and I don't think it's going to change anyone's perspective, which is probably where my original thought of today came from, is if you're using social media and you're just throwing out, you know, anything that backs up your opinion, I'm just going to say stop. Because I don't know anybody that's had their opinion changed by a social media post. And, I think that's more antagonistic. Because if you go against, if it's something that I don't agree with, I kind of, maybe it's just me, but I get a little, you know, when I've seen, like, that's the only thing you've been posting for a week or so, I question, like, why are you even, or, as the theme of the show is hypocrisy, if I see you throwing out a bunch of stuff on one side and never calling out that, you know, the other side, I tend to take your opinion not as serious, I should say.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't post much political stuff anymore because I do see it as just, if you're posting it, you're going to just be dividing people more. Unless it's something people just don't know about, which you may as well post if it's something small, you know. But I was recently, I mean, I was thinking about posting stuff related to Sanders saying felons should vote. It's like, how do I even debate that with people? Mm-hmm. Who are my friends who support Sanders, who support that just because he said it? I don't even know how, because I feel like if I just debate with them, it's going to be a waste of time. I don't know what to tell them. I mean, like I, you know, because it's funny, my Facebook feed's mostly far people who are more far left, friends I know, and the Democratic Party, you know, where I live. And it's like, well, I want them to vote for the eventual candidate in 2020. If I divide them, it could happen, the same thing could happen as last time. And, you know, the Bernie Sanders supporters, the millennials, didn't vote for Clinton and she lost. I mean, I don't know what the, if there's any way to get them to be more moderate or get them to, like, maybe be a bit less reactionary. I don't know. It's not a, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, do you think Bernie actually has a chance this time? Or do you think?
No, I don't. I mean, the primary, you mean? Or like,
yeah, in the primary. I mean, I think, to me, the Democratic Party has moved, I don't want to say further left, because I think Bernie's very good.
Yeah, well, the irony about all this is that he doesn't have a chance because so many people have gone under his umbrella, so to speak. Like, they're trying to be like Bernie. Because he's, people who support, you know, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, a lot of the more far left candidates who are trying to be like him are splitting that vote. And then meanwhile, Biden's taking up all the moderate vote. Because it is split in half. I mean, and Biden's the only candidate that the moderate Democrats are going to vote for, as of where you have all these other candidates pitching out all these far left policies in the primary in Iowa, New Hampshire next year. Biden will get, I think, most of the vote if it were held tomorrow. You know, or Buttigieg would get some, you know. He has a chance of actually taking away votes from both, maybe, because he's kind of going in between, but the modern far left. But
all right, my last question to you on this topic is, do you think one of the 22, 23 people that have announced candidacy right now for the Democrats will be the primary winner, or do you think we'll see somebody come out, a surprise contender come out early next year?
Early next year. Well, I mean, like Trump declared in 2015 in June. I mean, so it could happen. I don't know if there's anybody left, really. I mean, like, Stacey Abrams, who ran Georgia as governor, said she might run, but I'm not a huge fan. I like her policy, but I don't think she could win a national election. Oprah could run. I don't know. That'd be the equivalent of Trump, a celebrity on the left. I don't know if there's anybody else to really who could run. But they've exhausted every single Democratic politician who thought about it. You know, the only one who did it was Sherrod Brown, who was one of my favorites. Yeah. Has to be one of my. That's how it works. But yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I think if we've got all the candidates that we're going to run. Maybe one additional one, but they aren't going to run.
I'm holding out. I think Mark Cuban could be a surprise.
That'd be interesting.
But then, okay, follow-up question. Because you have so many, I shouldn't say you, because there are so many Democrats running, if Trump wins in 2016 or 2020, will this harm the Democratic pool for 2024?
Yes and no. I mean, Biden and Sanders can't run, because it would be way too old. But Buttigieg would still be a possibility. I don't know if it would harm them. I mean, it would harm whoever runs against them and loses, for sure, depending on who that is. But you've got Gavin Newsom, your governor, who, you know, or we'll see how he does as governor of California, who can run. You've got, you know, some different, you know, politicians in the Democratic Party who have potential in the future, you know, depending on how the next couple years go, because you got another midterm election, you know, around the corner after 2020. But.
Yeah, so we have to wait at least till 2028 for AOC, correct?
Yeah. Well, I'm dreading that. I'm dreading that election year for sure. Yeah.
All right. Well, as I kind of taking this back to the beginning, I said, kind of had this epiphany that talking politics, while I enjoy our conversations and, you know, we are able to have civil discussions, I don't know if I want to keep doing discussing the current topics of politics every month. So I talked with you before we started recording about this, and I think starting next month, we'll see how it goes. We may come back to this, but trying to bring the politics back under the similar topics of the other Positive Cynicism podcast, I think we're going to start looking at politics and pop culture and how, you know, film and television portray certain sides, or how it's changed from, I think, you know, your sort of propaganda World War II type to your Vietnam films and everything. So if you have any suggestions for us, feel free to hit me up on Twitter at Chad Smart, or you can find the Positive Cynicism Facebook page. But yeah, I think that's an interesting, I'm hoping it's an interesting discussion.
I've actually watched some propaganda, so yeah, that'd be fun. Yeah. Okay. I find it fascinating. So, yeah.
All right, well, I may need you to give me some suggestions. So, yeah. All right, well, that's going to do it for this month, this week's Positive Cynicism. Any last words? Anything you want to say? Like, just calm down politics, or?
You know, I was thinking the only thing that brought us together this past month was Game of Thrones and Avengers. I don't watch Game of Thrones, but Avengers brought everybody together, and everybody for a couple nights was the same place, all agreeing on one thing. Yeah. I guess that's the only silver lining these days.
Yeah, as of this recording, I have 2 episodes left of the second season of Game of Thrones. And I say I'm looking forward to in 4 weeks when I'm done, and so I can complain with everybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
I guess Game of Thrones didn't bring people together. They all hated it, maybe. Maybe that's the same difference.
I mean, as long as you're all on one side. You know.
There you go. Yeah.
There you go. But, all right, well, Brandon, thanks as always for joining me. And as always, question everything, do something positive.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.